Yesterday, so the piece of the Gemara on Gimel on Beis, this din of Rav Chista, that you're not allowed to destroy a shul until you build another one in its place. We saw two reasons why that might be true. Either because you're going to be lacking a place to daven in the interim, or because we're afraid you may not end up rebuilding it. We said that the nafkamina between the two is if you have a place that's not a shul to daven in the interim. At least your davening will not go interrupted. Then we brought two stories that seem to corroborate the general thinking of this halacha, whether it's exactly the same or not the same. That was seemed to be a machlokas rishonim, right? Remember, Mar Zutra had the summer shul and the winter shul, and knocked down one during the other season. So the pashtus is that is certainly coming to say that if it's a issue of Lutzluya, they have somewhere else to daven, right? And that was how the Rush learned and some of the other Rishonim as well. However, Tosfos wanted to learn it probably also according to Mandemar, who said that it is Piusa, which would be in line with the next story that the Gemara gave of Ravina and Ravashi, who wanted to know that if you have all the money lined up, or if you have all the bricks literally lined up, right, everything's out there, are you able to knock down the shul before building the other one? And the answer, the Gemara said no. So let's see that part of the Gemara again. Can we focus yesterday really on the Beikaita and the Beisisva? So let's see Ravina. So Ravina says, Ravashi, Gavu Zuzi, if you have the money together, let's put aside what's halacha. Amar le dilma misrami lehu pidyon shvuyim. Maybe you will end up with a situation of pidyon shvuyim. Pidyon shvuyim is obviously no small matter. It is very significant, and therefore the Gemara is concerned that you might come and sell or use the money that you got for the shul in order to rescue the person. So maybe just line up the bricks and then you can put aside the kshure. Then what would be the halacha? You could even end up selling the things that you bought for the Beis Hamikdash. How far does that go? So even if you built it, no person doesn't sell his dwelling. So we have 2 points that we need to try and understand before we move on weiter in the Gemara. One is, what exactly is the Gemara saying with this ihachi ki banyanami? If it was already built, then you should also be concerned. And the second one, which is this: are there limitations on when you're allowed to sell the shul? Meaning, is pidyon shvuyim davka? Is it only for pidyon shvuyim that you would be allowed to, or maybe are you not allowed to for pidyon shvuyim, but they're going to do it anyway? Meaning, sometimes that how can I not? Even though it's not winter. Meaning, what are you allowed to do in terms of selling the or using money which is dedicated for one purpose? If I have money, tzedakah money, which has been allocated for a specific use, am I allowed to just switch it to something else? Seems a little bit strange. So in terms of the first point, so ihachi ki banyanami. So Tosfos says, perish ad sheyis palaguba. It means until you daven in it. What's Tosfos telling us? Makashel Tosfos. What was bothering Tosfos that he is coming to answer? Right? Four words. What's he coming to tell us? Again, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that if you have everything lined up, you still can't, all the materials lined up, you still can't knock down the first shul in order to start building the second shul, because we're afraid that you're going to use the money for pidyon shvuyim. So Gemara says that if you take it to the extreme that you already bought the materials, then even if you built it, then you would still sell it. And what was the Gemara's answer to that?
People don't sell their houses.
People don't sell their houses. What does that mean?
You don't sell for redemption.
What?
For pidyon shvuyim, they don't sell houses. That's like a normal expectation or
return. Oh, is that how everybody learned it?
Yeah.
Normal expectation. Is it mutter?
It doesn't say that you can't,
right? Doesn't say that you can't.
You're not
allowed to. You're not allowed to redeem somebody for more than his value. But again, what if there's no liquidity? There's no liquidity in town. So we need the appropriate amount. The guy, they only want $100,000. I don't know, whatever. Let's say something. What would we call reason? Well, we don't have the money. The only way that we can get the money as a tzibur is by selling the shul. Well, okay, just to give an example, where somebody's selling their house. So again, it's not necessarily a violation of that Mishnah in Maseches Gittin. Meaning the answer of the Gemara did not say, we probably would have wanted the Gemara to say, you can't sell the shul. Are you allowed to sell the shul? The svara that the Gemara gave does not necessarily imply an iser. Is that taka true? You can sell the shul for pidyon shvuyim? They want to. It's interesting, right?
Don't people sell shuls all the time?
I hope not. Again, depending on what you're selling it to, selling the shul might be worse than knocking it down to build another one. Again, it's more of a sugi at the end of Maseches Megillah, but not so simple at all. So again, Rashi didn't really tell us anything. So Rabbeinu Gershom says, look at Rabbeinu Gershom. Ihachi da'akati ikal mechash, that you're concerned, even if you have the materials, I already bought the beams, I have all the building materials in there, but I'm still going to be concerned. Afilu ki mivne hai, even if it's already built, the new one, lo lister acharina, you should not knock down the other one. The ikal mechash, the misramid lu pidyon shvuyim, maybe a pidyon shvuyim case will arise, umezavni lei, and you'll sell it. Vikab shiusa, and then they're going to have a pshia. Umishani dirasi de inshalom is davin. The person doesn't sell his house. Kol shekei beis hakneses. And certainly, the shul. Hovil umesukanu, since it's already ready. The lekka lemechash. And therefore, you don't have to be concerned. Right? I think. Sounds like Rabbeinu Gershom. Again, sounds like we're not dealing with whether it's us or whether it's mutter. Again, the concern of Shiusa has to do with the reality. Are we going to be concerned that there's a chance that there ends up there in the end there's going to be a shul destroyed and not going to be replaced? So says the Gemara on the tzad that the reason is Shiusa. On the tzad that the reason is pshiyusa, then if a person doesn't sell their house, the chances that they're going to sell the shul are even less. And therefore, we no longer have to be concerned. Meaning the reason for the gzeira doesn't apply. But again, it doesn't sound in the pshat shat that it's necessarily usser. So what's Tosu saying? Meaning, what's he explaining? What line is he explaining? He's explaining the kasha, right? Ihachi, if it's true that we're going to be concerned that you're going to take the building products and sell them, then even if it's built, we should have the same concern. But it says Tosos in the kasha, that's only ad sheyispalu l'ba. only until you daven there. Once you daven there,
you can't sell it.
Maybe it's usher. Maybe it's usher. Maybe that's exactly what Tosfos is saying. And again, it's not necessarily against Rashi or Ben Gershom, right? Rashi is not. Right? Rashi never says that it's already functioning. And even the Lashon of Rabbeinu Gershom is even more explicit, right? It's mesukan. It's ready. It's available for use. It's available for use. But maybe that's what Tosfos is trying to add, which is that at a certain point, it's not that just that it's unlikely it's going to happen. At a certain point, you can't do it. At a certain point, it's usher. When does it have Kedusha Space HaKnesses? That seems to be what Tosfos is saying. When it's designated as a shul, it does not, as of yet, have Kedusha Space HaKnesses. Once you daven in it, that infuses the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses into what otherwise is just a structure. It's a structure that we designed for tefillah, but we didn't use it for tefillah. And until that point, for a mitzvah at least, maybe you'd be allowed to do it. That's what the Gemara's question is. You're allowed to do it, but it's unlikely you're going to do it, and therefore, mishum shusa, you do not have to be concerned. You do not have to be concerned. No, the Chor is a Pshat Tosfos. Otherwise, what's Tosfos saying? So the Chor, he's adding an akuda that neither Rashi nor the Rabbeinu Gershom really addressed. Right? They didn't address at what point is there going to be some sort of iser. You're really just talking about certain practical concerns. Fine. Good. That was one question. The second question is this limited to Pidyon Shvuyim? Or is Pidyon Shvuyim, I would call, I guess, the example that the Gemara decided to give, because it's, again, are we doing it because of what's practically what are we concerned about, or are we doing it in terms of halacha concern? Meaning, is there no kedusha to the ma'os that I can do anything, any mitzvah that I want with it? Or is it dafka pidyon shvuyim because it's a great I? If it's any mitzvah, why would the Gemara say pidyon shvuyim? Because A, that's expensive, and B, it's a big deal. But if it would have been to buy the tzibur an esrog if they didn't have it, one of those esrog shortage years, post shemitah, whatever it is, maybe that would be mutter also. Right? It's not clear from the Gemara. So not clear from the Gemara. So says the Yad Ramah, get a chance to see, there's an Islam in Gimel. So Amar Le Rabbeinu Ravashi Gavu Zuzi Manke Mai Miiko Mechashup Shiu. So lo, in a case where you already have the money, you have to be concerned. Amar Le Chashinan Dilo Misrami Melsa the Mitzvah. One of those major points that's tucked away in the deeper Hamaska. I mean, he doesn't need to justify it. Clearly, he had a different girsa. And he didn't have the girsa of Pidyon Shvuyim. He had the girsa that Mishnah really a mitzvah. That a mitzvah would arise. Obviously, it needs a certain magnitude, because otherwise, you don't need to take it. You're not going to destroy the amount of money up in the shul. It should cost a significant amount of money. But Dil Mishnah Milsa, the mitzvah, the Ayyavahu. And then you're going to give it. Then in the second case, now keep looking. Again, like the Gemara said it twice. Ravina and Ravashi had a back and forth about the money, and then they said, okay, fine. Now, we have the money, But I already bought the bricks. Everything is sitting out there waiting to be put in by the contractor. So Ramu Livne Adri Karvik Shirin Mahindi Hashikusolo Maskuna Hashinan Dilma Mishami Milsa de Piyon Shivuyim.
We're so concerned.
Again, it's clear that he is making a distinction between when your money has been designated versus when you have purchased the called the items of the shul, the construction materials, or built it. And Amrle again, it's clear that it's not usher, right? Because that line of it's lo shkiach l'gazim b'rabbanan, that is a general svara for when the rabbanan are concerned about things. And here the rabbanan are not concerned. Why not? They're not concerned because it's not going to happen, or it's unlikely that it's going to happen. But he seems to somehow distinguish between the two, which is very interesting. Right? So somehow, maybe the Arama is saying that there are dargos. There are levels within them. So we still have to try and understand that. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Dilma Misrame Pidyon Shvuyim Afagav Dilo Abidin Shizvunim Elso de Mitzvah Kigon Staka. Even though it's unlikely, it's uncommon that a person's going to sell something like Afagav did lo avidi in shilizvunin. Well, a person's not going to sell for something the mitzvah of a mitzvah like it's daka. Achashesh achana kol kach the kivik shir shrig livne el torchim hum machrazim the kaim a mitzvah makom acher. So normally for a quote unquote regular mitzvah, even tzedakah, meaning oftentimes, it's some sort of need of the tzibur that is what you're paying for. So even if there is a tzedakah need that we need a lot of money suddenly, it's not common that we're going to take the money that's already been collected and sell the pieces of the shul in order to be able to do it. We try to find another source of assets, another source of money. Two factors. It's usually time sensitive. It's usually time sensitive, and it's very expensive. Mizav neluche in darkam laachar, laachar achi, laachar achi, la sheein darkam laachar achi gumaos. What does that mean? Sheein darkam. Oh, laachar to wait achi gumaos. You can't sit around waiting until you get the money. So why should it be different if you already build the shul? Again, he's talking about the in-between, before you daven. So he's explicit. So again, so the points that emerge from Rabbeinu Yonah are A, that he agrees with the way that we read Tosfos, which that Tosfos is adding an akuda. That until you get to the point of them davening there, yes, it's uncommon, even though it's mutter. But that's enough of a reason that the rabbanim are not going to be geyser, that you can't knock down the shul because you're afraid you're not going to rebuild it. After it is palupa, then it's usher. Then it's usher. And the if you think about it, right? If it was true that they could sell it even afterwards, that doesn't matter if you knock it down, you can whether you do the old one or the new one, you know, any shul that's standing could be knocked down for pinyon shvuyim then, right? Doesn't matter if it's about not rebuilding the new one until the old the
not knocking down the old one until the new one is built, it's Ein L'Davar Sof. Because if at any point you could just knock down the shul, then you know, no shul is safe in a certain sense, right? So it's something that you could have. You might have to do it. You might have to do it. Oh. So the Rambam says, yeah.
Doesn't he say even after?
That's going. You think it's going after?
I thought he was saying that on before. Let's read it again, maybe. Kibanu nami, even if it was built, lo listor, you should not knock down the first one, achi spalububo. Until you davner, ki oz vada ein darkamim kor filipinan shuya. Kibanu nami, even if it was built, lo listor, you shouldn't knock it down, achi spalububo, until you daven in it. He asks, because then, Vada ain't dark and lunkor. What are you saying? Are you right? Ain't dark and lunkor. So again, the kasha then would be, even if it was built, that should still be, even if it was built, that would still, in the kasha at least, that would still be the Derek to knock it down. Interesting. So again, if that's the case, I hear you saying, good. Again, I don't think that's that what Tosfos is saying. I guess it's possible. Once you have it this way, you could read Tosfos that way also. Right? Meaning, all Tosfos is trying to point out is that there's a difference. Right? Right now we have different stages. We have the stage when it's... Step one is that it's just money. Step two is materials. Three is built, and four is davening. Right? So the Gemara asks explicitly about step one and step two. And the Gemara at that point is assuming two things. A, that it is mutter to do, and B, that it is normal to do. Then the Gemara says, if it's true, if two is true, then we should be worried about three. So what is that kasha? So obviously the kasha is assuming that it is mutter. That it is mutter. The answer of the Gemara is that it's not normal. That it's not normal. So three is mutter, but not the derek. So I thought, which is how I read Tosfos, if you're going to add it again, you could either say there's no difference between three and four. That's one possibility. Is that it's all mutter, and that's why the Gemara didn't differentiate. But Tosfos made it sound like he's throwing in the kasha never was on if you daven. So why was the kasha ever on if you daven? So either you'll say because we knew that it's not the derech, it's mutter not derech. But here we had a havamim and there we did it. I guess that's how Rabbeinu Yonah is reading it. The alternative way is that here after it's daven, right? It's aser, and therefore the kasha never gets past here. So I think you're right, Rabbeinu Yonah. I think that's the simple reading of Rabbeinu Yonah. It's a pretty astounding chiddush that they could do. I guess they couldn't just base that. Because until we get to number four, we're probably not really addressing Kedushas Beis HaKnesses at all. We're dealing with Hilchos Tzedakah, right? Being Mishana, switching from one Tzedakah to another. If we assume that there is some sort of idea of a Kedusha to the Beis HaKnesses, so even after you daven, you could still do it. So again, then any shul should be up for grabs. Seems difficult. I know, Tzarki, and I think the pshat they're saying Tosfos is good, but I think you're reading Rabbeinu Yonah accurately. And again, Tzarki and how he can somehow group those two together, but not 100% clear. Not 100% clear. Okay, good. Thank you. Oh. So
Okay, so we saw that the Yad Ramah, entertained the possibility that it's by other mitzvahs, not just Pidyon Shvuim, at least when it's in the money stage. So says the Rambam, Mimad Vosenim, that you're allowed to use the money of the shul for a Dvar Mitzvah. It does not tell us specifically for Pidyon Shvuim. Which sounds like, again, consistent with, again, not the holding like the Yad Ramah. Again, it's definitely, the Parash says that that was the gears of the Yad Ramah. It's not his payers, right? He writes it as a throwaway line in his Dibur Hamasko. It's not that he's like, oh, the Gemara says Pidyon Shvuyim, but that's just an example of a big mitzvah, and I'm going to tell you that it's by every mitzvah. It's not like that was the gears that he had. So it could definitely be that the Ramah had a similar gears as well. That money that has been collected for the shul, one would be allowed to switch to a bar mitzvah. And that's how many of the mefarshim and the on the side of the Shulchan Aruch learn as well. The Taz and the Bach assume that the girsa was Dilma Miskayim Milsa de Mitzvah. The Beis Yosef, though, he understands that the Gemara said Pidyon Shvuyim, but the Rambam understood that that was just an example. Of when it's likely slash needed to do such a thing. But if you think about it, if it's usher to switch, then it should be usher to switch. If it's mutter to switch, so yes, you have to figure out, if does this make sense on the communal level? These are my malos of stukka. But if it's mutter to switch the malos of Beis HaKnesses, does it really matter what mitzvah it is? As long as we, whoever we are, those Zion Tuvei Ha'ir, the people in charge, whoever they are, she has to decide that you can switch it. So the Gemara gives us a likely example. But it does not have to be that that is, I guess, the what we call the only example. But fundamentally, the way they're learning the Gemara is that you can switch it from the Ma'os of Tzedakah to a mitzvah. Yeah, which is still a Chiddush. But again, maybe not limited to... Pidyon Shvuyim. The problem is that this other Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim in Kufman Gimel and Sifay sounds like normally you're not allowed to switch from one to the other unless you're going from a Kedusha Kala to a Kedusha Chamur, right? There are different levels. This is what the Gemara at the end of Masechta Megillah elaborates on more. There are different levels, there are different dargos within Kedusha. So you can upgrade to a higher level of Kedusha, but the Stam, the Shanos, that is not going to be, permitted. So how can you take the most that were connected for the basic Nessus, which is basically money of Tzedakah, and switch it to a different mitzvah? So the Magen Avraham over there gives a technical answer. Again, some of this might get into the details of Hilchos Tzedakah, but that basically when people give money with their representatives that see we're there, there's a certain, again, I don't think he uses the term lay based in Masna Elayim, but it's almost like that, which is that there are built into the Nesina, to the giving of the Tzedakah, are certain conditions. And you are allowed within the Tzedakah that one is giving to make certain conditions that it can be... transposed. Or you can switch from one to the other. Good. So again, it may be something Pidyon Shvuyim, but it certainly is possible that it's not. That's just an example. If you're gonna learn that it's Davka Pidyon Shvuyim, and that's what's difficult a little bit about the Yad Ramah, they starts off by saying in general that he switches to Pidyon Shvuyim. So is that because there's a difference halachically between them? Or, at that point, he's saying, I already told you that it's mutter lidvar mitzvah. However, when it comes to selling the materials, that's obviously going to have to be for, a very big, maybe not because it's mutter, but again, in terms of Aruch HaShash. So it's like almost like two different issues that we have to juggle and keep in mind, which is on one end, we're asking ourselves, is it mutter, is it asin? The other one is, do we have to be choshesh Mishum Shiusa, because our entire concern is really Gzeir Drabana. And not Meikir Adin. And not Meikir Adin. The Rabbeinu Yonah also makes one other point. Not Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? A lot of it has to do with, it sounds like he said, there's the psychological reality. The more effort that they already put into it, they're not going to want to back out. Right? It's not exactly a sunken cost philosophy, but in a certain sense, once I've already put in more effort, then it's going to take more for me to undo it. Again, on a pshusa level. Again, we're on the level of making sure that I don't do what is, that I have to be concerned that we're going to end up not rebuilding the shul, because that really is what we are mostly concerned about. Okay, fine. Good. Any other questions on this sugya? Fine. So let's go on with a little bit of the, a little bit about Hordas. All right, was there any lines left to go over here? We have more finished off. So, the only last issue, I guess we'll see quickly, was again, it said that Rav Ashi, right, he saw that there was a tiyun in the base of Medrash and the base of Knesset, and he destroyed it, told him to rebuild it, and then he put his mattress there and slept there in order to make sure that they would build quickly and they wouldn't have to hear some Yusa. The Rishonim deal with the issue of sleeping in shul, that it's not recovered based on Knesset. What's interesting is the assumption of the whole sugya, the whole kasha, is that there seems like there's kedusha based on Knesset even if they knock it down. Right? Where they knocked down the first one, in that makom now they're building it, so somehow the kedusha based on Knesset must be that it's still there. Right? The kasha is, how can you sleep there as they're building it? Right? David tells them, you know, build around me. I want to make sure that you're going to build it. So they give technical answers about whether it's built on Sinai, you're talking about it above, it's eating and drinking is mutter, sleeping is not mutter, whatever it goes through. But again, I think the underlying point that you see is that even when the shul is destroyed, there's still a kedusha there. There still is a kedusha based on Knesset in terms of the place where the shul was. Which again, I think is an interesting finish. Okay. Above and mutter. So again, a little bit of backdrop here. A little bit of backdrop here. So, the first Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech. First Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech. Comes along Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan, and they destroy, they're from Babel, they destroy the first Beis HaMikdash after the first Beis HaMikdash was standing for 410 years, and they exile the Jewish people to Babel. The Jewish people are in Babel for 70 years. They're in Babel for 70 years in Golos. What happens at the end of the 70 years? Koresh becomes the king of Babel. He beats Belshazzar, and was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and he takes over. He takes over. Beginning of Sefer Ezra describes how thankful Koresh was for the fact that he is now basically, for all intents and purposes, ruler of the world. And therefore, he realizes that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You get in of itself is fascinating. And he says, like, I want to do something nice for God in exchange. And therefore, I want his people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. You have 70 years after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Koresh is the one who wants the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He returned the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, gave them what they needed in order to get it started. However, there weren't so many Jews that wanted to listen to Koresh and go back to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And Zerubbabel, together with 42,000 plus Jews, went back to build the Beis HaMikdash, but many, many Jews stayed behind. For the most part, only people who had nothing really to stay for, those were the ones who went. But you know, if you had your business and you had whatever else was behind, they stayed in Babel and did not return to Yerushalayim to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. They begin building the Beis HaMikdash until Achashverosh becomes king. When Achashverosh becomes king, he is convinced to halt the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, and then the whole Purim story takes place. But Achashverosh, together with Esther, have a son. His name was Daryavish. And Daryavish decides that he is going to allow the Jews to continue rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, allow the construction to pick up again. That construction picks up 18 years after Koresh had originally given permission for the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Took a few years, but the Beis HaMikdash was completed. However, the glory of the second Beis HaMikdash, as much as we had the Gadol Kavod Abayis Achron, that was either in Shanim or in height. But in terms of the actual glory, so the Gemara tells us in Seches Yoma that there were many things that were present in the first Beis HaMikdash that were not present in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara Yuma and Daf Chav Aleph on the base. Among the things that were missing were the Aron, Kruvim. The Gemara says the Shechina was missing. So there's still going hell, right? I know it basically was the Shechina. So it's pretty clear. It doesn't mean the Shechina was completely missing, but the Shechina was not Shoira, did not dwell in the Beis HaMikdash with the same, I don't know, magnitude or glory or with the same intensity as it did in the first Beis HaMikdash. And there were certain miracles that the Gemara tells us existed in Bayis Rishon. They did not exist in Bayis Sheni. Again, Bayis Sheni was not as glorious in terms of the Jewish people. Well, that's kind of how it started. It had a rough start in terms of who was building it. There was the fact that Koresh and Goyim were the ones that started the building process. So much so that the Gemara is clear, and Rambam writes this as well, that they, at least during certain periods of times, fasted on Tisha B'Av while the second Beis HaMikdash was around, mourning the loss of the first Beis HaMikdash, which seems preposterous. But it's only preposterous if you think that you've returned everything that was lost. But when we didn't, they're still mourning the things that were lost. And there were things that were really and truly lost. During the second Beis HaMikdash, which stood for 420 years, they were basically four periods of rulers over the Beis HaMikdash. For the first 34 years, it was Paras and Madai, right? Persia, that's what I mean or something like that. Right? Paras and Madai. The next 180 years were the Greeks. Then, following the Greeks, were the victors of the battle against the Greeks, the Chashmonaim. They ruled for 103 years. Now, they weren't supposed to be the kings, because they were not from Shevet Yehuda. They should not, they were Kohanim. They should not have been the kings. And that's Ramban, a few places in Chumash, deals with what they did wrong in terms of the Chashmonaim. And then the last 103 years was the kings of Hordus through Agrippas until the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash by the Romans. Okay? Our Gemara picks up with Hordus. Hordus is a big Russia. A big Russia. Right? I think in English they call Herod the Great. I guess it was great for some people, but for the Jews, he was not particularly great. So much so that the Gemara says that the day that he died, the Chachamim made into a Yantav. Zayin Kislev is the Yom Shabbos Bohurdus. So again, not exactly the type of king that we really wanted. The story that the Gemara is going to tell us right now, which again is connected to the previous Gemara because, well, we'll see in a moment how it's connected, is talking about this king at in the latter part of the Tkufa of the second Beis Hamikdash of Hordas. Good? Okay. That was just to give a little bit of context to the Gemara. So says the Gemara, the first wide line, Ubaba ben Buta, Hechi Azbele Eitzel Hordas, the mystery of the Beis Hamikdash. How could Baba ben Buta advise Hordas to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Now again, on the surface that sounds crazy, but again, he was telling him to repair the Beis HaMikdash, right? He was trying to fix up the Beis HaMikdash, as we'll see in the continuation of the story. So obviously, Baba ben Buta wasn't telling him to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and get rid of it. But if we have a Rav Amar Chista lo lister inish biknishta ad debayne biknishta achrita, how could he have done this? If you can't destroy a shul until you have another shul in place, then certainly you can't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. How on earth could Baba ben Buta have advised Hordas to destroy the Beis HaMikdash without building another one? That's the Kasha Gemara. That's the connection between the sugyas. So the Gemara answers again, and then the Gemara is going to go backwards and give a little backdrop on Hordas. But the Gemara answers, "Ibayis ema tiyu achazabei." So either again, we had a heter. What was the heter the Gemara gave? If it was in disrepair. So if Baba ben Buta felt that the Beis HaMikdash really needed repair, as it was broken. So then you're allowed to do it. The din d'rabbanan of Rav Chista doesn't apply. That's the first answer. Ibayisema machusa shangi. The king is different. Delo hajabe, because he will not be chayzer. Meaning, pshiusa doesn't apply to the king. Why? Because he's the king. He's the king. He's not going to run out of money. You can just plunder or print or whatever he's going to do. And if he says he's going to do it, he's going to look like an idiot. He's going to make sure that it's rebuilt. There's no concern of pshiusa. What about litzluye? Weren't there two reasons the Gemara gave? What about having a place to, you're going to lose out on offering karbanos? So again, according to the first answer, the Gemara were okay. Right? Because tiyua overrode everything. So some bring this as a raya. That's how we know that we paskin, that the real reason is pshiusa. Because the continuation of the Gemara over here is only assuming mishum pshiusa. Is only assuming mishum pshiusa, and says that it does not apply over here, dafka, because he is a king. How do you see that? I'm not sure exactly why the Gemara has approved it, but we have a statement of Shmuel, Damar Shmuel, Yarmah Chusa, Karnature, Akartur, Vahadabe. The king says that they're going to uproot a mountain, they're not going to be chayzer. Okay. I guess just extra support for the fact that the king does what he says he's going to do. So who is this Hordas man? So Hordas Avda the Beis Chashmonai Hava. Hordas was an Eved to the Chashmonaim. Nosan Einav Ba'osa Tinokos. And he found one of the Chashmonaim young girls. Right, he doesn't say that explicitly. Rabbeinu Gershon says, right, to Beis Chashmonaim. Particularly attractive. Yom Echad, one day, Shama Hahu Gabra Baskala, that person, meaning Hordas, heard a Baskal, a heavenly voice, come out that said, "The Amar Kol Avda Demarit Hashta Matzlach." It's a pell. I don't know exactly what this even means. He heard a Baskal come out that said, "Any Eved that rebels right now will be Matzliach. His rebellion will be good." Okay. So Hordas says, great. Come. He got up.
Katlin and the Kule Marvose. Bishairi lahu yenukta. So he killed all of his masters. He wiped out the base Chashmonoi. And he left over this girl. When this girl realized that he wants to marry her or have some sort of immoral relationship with her, she went up to the roof, and she raised her voice, Amra, command the Asi v'amrim beis chashmonoi ka'asina. Anybody who claims that they came from the house of the chashmonoim, avdahu, you should know that he is an eved. My high. So ishtari minayu elahi yinukta. Vahi yinukta naflam igra la'ara. She said, I'm the only one left. Hurda swiped out everybody. So if there are any other children that are claiming, or any person that claims to come from the Beis Chashmonai, they came from Hordas. And the child of the Eved is going to be in Eved. What did Hordas do? He lost out on his woman. Tamna Shava Shanin Bidubsha. He buried her for 7 years in honey. The Rashba writes on this, again, wait, I think it's just obvious. Honey has a property of hardening and preserving. Right? I feel like they think you have like fossils in like the Museum of Natural History. They're like preserved in honey. Maybe the stuff's not honey. But like that amber colored stuff, it's like honey. So same idea, makes sense. Ika da Amri Bala, Ika da Amri Lo Bala. Okay. Some said that he was together with her while she was encased in the honey, and some say not. The Amri Lo Bala, Adani Sivri Yisir, okay. The ones who said Bala, that was in order to subside his Yitzhara. The Amri Lo Bala, Aditamna Kiyachidinemu Basma Nasiv. He wanted to show that he was married into royalty. Okay, so some say, I think the Marsha, I think, says you can't take this Gemara literally. He says you can't take this Gemara literally. Why not? You can't. He says the Marsha. Not the Marsha. I thought it was the Marsha. I don't see it now. Maybe it wasn't the Marsha. One of the Marsha points out you can't take it literally. But again, I guess it has to do with what he was trying to gain at it. Was he somehow trying to use her in, again, some sort of inappropriate way to for his desires? Or was he simply trying to be meyaches her? Now, I don't know. Like, is it very compelling that you're from the royal kingdom if your wife is encased in honey? Somehow, whatever this is, must have been somewhat realistic or not. Tzarech Ian Gadol. I don't really understand that much. I'm sure there are deeper meanings to it. But again, the beginning of this Gemara, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Mirzah Shem tomorrow. But the point of the Gemara thus far is, again, is to establish, A, that there was this transition which took place between Hordas and the base Chashmonai. He was just an Eved. His descendants are Avadim. Nobody else could have possibly come from him. And we'll see as we go forward what this has to do with Bava ben Buta and how the rest of the sugya plays out. So we'll stop here. Nimritz Hashem tomorrow. We'll hopefully try to get up to the end of the story on the middle of Daled Amud Aleph, and then move on from there.